All right, gentlemen, go ahead. Welcome.
Good morning. It's delightful to be with you this morning. We look forward to the opportunity of having an update for several months. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the Transportation Committee for the opportunity of speaking with you today. I'm H. David Burton. I am currently the chair of the Board of Trustees of the Utah Transit Authority. I am pleased to have with me today the current interim president and CEO, Mr. Jerry Benson, and on my left and on my right, Mr. Matt Sybil, who is the chief planning officer for UTA and has been for some time. I think you are aware of and know these gentlemen. We're also pleased to have in the audience the vice chair of the UTA board, Mr. Robert McKinley. Bob, if you just wave your hand there, they can see who you are. And along with five or six others of our board of trustees, for which we're grateful for their attendance. Just refresh your memory, mission statement for the Utah Transit Authority is, for your review, is that we are an agency that strengthens and connects communities, enables individuals to pursue a fuller life and with greater ease and convenience. And in a nutshell, that's what we do. Over the last several opportunities to visit with you, we have shared with you a little brochure that outlines where we have been, where we're going, and what we have accomplished. We will not go into those in great detail in terms of what has transpired in the past, but we will obviously bring you up to date as to what has been accomplished in the last year or so, and then move forward with what we're currently working on. One of the issues that we have paid a great deal of attention to has been transit-oriented development and how that relates to UTA and how UTA participates in that issue across the width and breadth of the Wasatch Front. We have also, as I think we've reported to you before, we have hired a new general counsel, which we're deeply grateful, and more recently a government relations officer. We have completed extensive studies relative to compensation and benefits. We have dealt with travel issues for some period of time in terms of policy, in terms of actual what has transpired. And we have been deeply involved in one of the most singular issues that faces is the long-term financing plan that, to support UTA going forward. We have overhauled many of the policies and procedures and personnel. That is virtually complete at this point in time. We have a new ethics policy and goal setting. We have made personnel changes and additions. We're pleased to indicate to you that we have now a completely functional internal audit staff, all professionally credentialed. We have reached out with much more in vigor and much more intensity with our stakeholders. And we have, I think very proudly, we have been able to increase service in a significant amount in spite of our limited resources. Much of that has been we've been able to do because of what has occurred in the industry relative to prices of fuel. We have continuing challenges as we continue to work forward to make UTA what it needs to be. Transparency and accountability is always paramount. The organizational restructuring within the organization is receiving a lot of attention. We have determined that it's in our interest and in the interest of our stakeholders as well as our clients, if you will, that we be more proactive in our communications, that we tell the story rather than having the story told secondhand by the media, and that we then have the opportunity of producing a commitment to our riders in terms of a rider's bill of rights, if you speak. So that's what we have accomplished, or that's what we're about. Those are our challenges, and we want to make certain that everybody knows that our goal is represented in this little statement: you can depend on UTA. And so with that, I would like to introduce to you our interim CEO, Mr. Jerry Benson. Jerry has been in that assignment for 7 or 8 months now, and has been a magnificent assistance to UTA, and his leadership has been absolutely spectacular. We're pleased with him and what he's accomplished. And so we'll let him go forward now with some service overviews. And at his conclusion, we will have Mr. Sybil tell you a little bit about what the future holds for us in terms of our long-range planning.
Okay, Jerry, really quick. Never mind, his light just went off. Okay, go ahead, Jerry.
Chairman Anderson, members of the committee, thanks for having us today. My name is Jerry Benson. I'm the interim president CEO at UTA. And for my share of our presentation, I want to give a brief update and overview of our service and talk about our short-range plans. And then Matt Sybil will talk about some of the longer-range plans. Just by way of setup, Utah, and you're going to hear from the MPOs later, is unique across the country in terms of our long-range planning and the integration of transportation planning. And while there is a long-range plan that anticipates additional funding and the opportunity for new projects, UTA's planning and budgeting has to be based on what we have in place today. So I'm going to talk about what's in front of us for the next year or couple of years based on resources that we know we have, and then you'll hear from others talk about long-range opportunities. So just a quick overview, we carry about 46 million boardings a year. You can see our ridership has grown significantly over the years. We operate almost 600 buses, 150 rail vehicles, 80 commuter rail vehicles, and almost 500 van pools. We have 126 bus routes, and on any given weekday, UTA is providing about 5,000 vehicle trips. So you think about each bus route from one end to the next, or a tracks route from one end to the next, or a van pool trip. You add all those up, it's about 5,000. And our goal is that all of that works as planned and as you would see in the schedule, and that it meets our customers' needs without incident day in and day out. We've been fortunate to be able to make some service improvements over the last couple of years. We extended hours last year on 5 bus routes. We added service to the airport, tracks, and streetcar hours of service, and I'll talk some more about that. We added weekend, evening, and holiday service on 13 bus routes and 4 of our rail routes, and we increased frequency on 7 bus routes. With the passage of Proposition 1, which was a result of leadership of Representative Anderson and this committee, with House Bill 362, there was an opportunity for counties across the state to increase their funding for roads and transit. In our service area, there were 3 counties that passed Proposition 1: Tooele, Weber, and Davis County. And so we've been hard at work in putting together the service improvements that would be associated with that Proposition 1 funding. Prior to Proposition 1 being put on the ballot, the UTA Board of Trustees clarified their position that the priority for new dollars from Proposition 1 would be on service, improvements to service, to make the better connections for people to take advantage of the great infrastructure and the high-speed rail backbone that we've built. And so we're excited to be starting 2 new bus routes in Davis County and to make improvements in frequency, extended hours of coverage, and increase span of coverage in all 3 counties. So some results of some of the early changes we made last year and some of the things that are coming relative to Proposition 1 show that when you provide better hours of service, for example, on tracks, you're able to appeal to a much larger market, and that's no surprise there. If we look at from 2015 to 2016, we added 673 trips. So that's more trips at the in the evenings or in the middle of the day or better frequency. And those resulted in about 8,000 additional daily boardings. People are able to use the system more conveniently than they were before. Another part of our short-range plan is managing our debt. So in 2006, the voters in primarily Salt Lake County passed a referendum to allow UTA to essentially build everything that was in the long-range plan up until 2030 by 2015. And so we call that the 2015 plan. We completed that in 2013. But that's a significant milestone for UTA, and it shapes our present and future in many ways. And one of the biggest ways is it created a debt burden, and this was intentional and it was part of the plan, but UTA now is managing, as part of our ongoing operations, paying off a significant amount of debt. And so you see in our 2016 budget, we're planning to contribute $103 million to principal and interest of that debt. And that compares to our service budget of about $221 million. So it's a significant part of our operating expense, and we need to keep our eye on that and diligently work to reduce that debt. UTA is primarily a service organization. We are like maybe other transportation organizations or airlines in that we make a promise to provide service, and then we try to deliver on that promise as best we can every day. We have found that applying worldwide best practices relative to lean and continuous process improvement is a great way for us to continue to up our game, both in terms of efficiency, but also service quality. We're fortunate in Utah to have the Shingo Institute, which is an arm of the John Huntsman School of Business at Utah State University. And this is the premier recognition for enterprise excellence and lean across the world. If you look at Shingo Prize winners, you see there some of the top performing organizations across the world in the US, the UK, Scotland, Asia. And we're fortunate to have that resource here. And last year we invited Shingo examiners to come into our organization and compare our enterprise excellence program against those world best practice companies. We've been able to apply these principles to improve our performance in many areas, and I'm highlighting one, which is on-time bus reliability. And we've been able to take that up into the low 90%, and we're not done yet. But a lot of those improvements came from applying lean principles and engaging with our workforce to make a whole bunch of small improvements throughout the system. Looking at our short term in a three-year horizon, we will continue to make incremental improvements in service in those parts of our service area that have stable funding or existing funding, but we'll be able to make significant improvements in those areas that have passed Proposition 1 and have asked for increases in service. I've already talked about debt, but our strategy includes making timely payments, but also where we have the opportunity to restructure debt to reduce our overall burden. Some of the key capital projects that we have in front of us, and we've last legislative session had a chance to talk with you about some of these. The first one is our tracks vehicle overhaul, and that's important work to do. This is part of maintaining a state of good repair. Our tracks vehicles, the oldest ones, are 17 years old now, and we're in the midst of now upgrading those components so they can go another 15 years or so. We're required to implement what's called positive train control. This is mandated by the Federal Railroad Administration, and it's an automated train control system that will control speed and stop trains if they're exceeding the parameters of the system. We already have in place a cab signal system on Front Runner that does that, but the requirements of the federal system are tighter than what we have, and so we're having to make a significant investment. This is over $20 million. In upgrading our cab signal system to meet the FRA positive train control requirements. The pictures on this slide show our plans and hopes for what we're calling the Depot District Alternative Fuels Technology and Service Center. So there's a lot of words in there, but in downtown Salt Lake, we have an aging garage on 2nd South and 6th West. This is undersized, and it's an old facility with crumbling infrastructure. Before UTA can really expand our fleet of natural gas buses, before we can start to move into electric buses in a big way, we need to have our ability to house those buses in downtown Salt Lake. We have the site, we have the architectural work done, we have the environmental work done, and so we're working on putting together a funding plan to make that Depot District Service Center happen. We're working hard on the relocation of our Trax Airport Station as part of the airport reconfiguration. And this will be a positive thing. It will make improved convenience for passengers. But our challenge right now is to work with Salt Lake City, the Airport Authority, the county, and other stakeholders to put together a funding plan for that relocation so that we're not making a choice between service and having a great airport station. And I think that we have a good partnership, and we'll be making progress on that. And then the last item that's right in front of us that's a big project is the Provo Orem Bus Rapid Transit Line. And that is underway. We received the first $4 million of a federal grant, and we'll be starting utility work shortly. The UTA Board of Trustees will be having a special meeting to look at some of the work that can get started right away. So we've received the environmental work approval. We received early award authority from the federal government to begin work on buying vehicles, building the facility, and doing utility work. So that's a little picture of some of the short-term things in front of us. And before I go on to talk about and ask Matt to help me address some of the longer-term issues, I thought it was important to share with the committee that we're in a different world today at UTA than we were in 2006. And at the time that the beginning of the 2015 program was anticipated, and before that, UTA was in a position to provide local match for capital and to get federal grants up to 80%. So our first few Trax rail lines were funded by the federal government at 80%, and the local match came from existing transit funds. Now, we have spent all that local match for the 2015 program, and we bonded against that, and we'll be paying that off for the next 25 years or so. So the other factor is federal money is much more competitive and a lower match than it was back then. So now most federal grants are in the 50% range, and the standard of performance that a project would have to meet in order to qualify for federal funding is much higher. And so we are looking for, in UTA's role is to help municipal governments and the MPOs advance projects, but recognize that the funding package for projects that are in the long-range plan to move forward is going to take a lot more creativity and a lot more partnerships and contributions. A recent project in Oregon, a transit project, had, I think, 14 funding contributors, and that's probably more the norm going forward than it has been in the past. And so as a project moves through development, funding, and implementation, UTA's role is going to be at a lower level than it was in the past, and municipal governments are going to play a bigger role together with the MPOs, and then certainly when we have a project ready to move forward, UTA will help take a leadership role.
So Jerry, really quick, so even though those federal dollars are fewer than they were, you know, as a percentage of the overall project, you're still seeing a lot of competition for those dollars, huh?
Absolutely. So while we're very pleased that U.S. Congress passed the FAST Act last year and provided 6 years of stable funding, the money that's available for us, it's a larger pool that's competing. Even though the FAST Act provided a decent amount of funding, it's a larger pool that's competing, and the standards that you have to hit have been raised. Mm-hmm. So many of the projects that we built as part of the 2015 program or before would not qualify under today's rules.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Matt Sybil, Chief Planning Officer with UTA. I'm going to be very brief here. I know we're running short on time. I wanted to offer, though, a takeaway before I even began, that we have a very bright future of public transportation along the Wasatch Front. And I say that by saying that the future, this bright future, will be realized by doing increased quality and quantity of everything you see on the screen here today. And I want to talk a little bit about each of these, and then actually transition into a quick overview of some of the initiatives that we're working on that Jerry referred to earlier. So actually, if you can go back to that, Jerry, I'm sorry. I want to talk about this for a second. Most of you in the room understand and have seen the top part of this figure. So our track service, which is light rail, front runner, commuter rail, and then you see a large bus there, 40-foot bus. Those three components make up the backbone of our system. They have what's called a line haul duty. So they move large amounts of people up and down established corridors. And these are the types of services that incrementally, like Jerry talked about, that we're trying to add service to. And then also, with our local partners, work on targeted capital projects to develop new extensions and new reaches and new connectivity for those types of projects. So in the middle, let me just talk about this for a second. Jerry, on the right side of the slide, Jerry talked about our Vanpool program. We've got some really new and innovative ways that we're extending the connecting power of our Vanpools. We're actually working with UDOT to connect with some of their outlying region offices. So you can actually leave a Vanpool at a front runner station. People can come from either direction or any connecting part of our system, get on a Vanpool, and they can either be driven by, in this case, a UDOT employee, or the company can hire a third-party driver who's not a UTA driver. So we're looking for additional ways to work those options. On the left, across from the Vanpool, it looks like a cross between a van and a bus, and it is. Those are vehicles that we call route deviation buses, or flex routes. And so they work really well for us in more suburban communities. There's not a dense interplay of streets, but people still really want to connect with the transit network. And they carry between 20 and 25 people. And they actually can go off route by a couple of blocks and pick you up if you've made a call in advance. And so people are really using that service more. And lastly, on this slide, what we're trying to do at UTA is also really get smarter with technology. And also look to be the integrator of new modes of transportation, not necessarily the owner, but the integrator. And so many of you have seen the green bike on the left, and then of course one of the transportation network companies on the right. Neither of them have a UTA logo. They're not red, white, and blue. They don't scream UTA, but they are a very powerful part of a connecting part of our system that help people fundamentally get from some of those modes up top to their final destination. So it's what we call our first and last mile challenge. And so those are things you'll see more of from us and see some more initiatives and partnerships on our end. So I'm not going to highlight all of the great work that's ahead of us, but I wanted to just profile a couple of different projects that are similar. Jerry referred to the Provo-Orem Bus Rapid Transit Project. So we have a very large service area that encompasses five counties, and we have bus rapid transit projects, and you'll hear more about this from our Metropolitan Planning Organization partners. Their plan is full of these type of projects, which are really light rail on rubber tires. And so we have a project in Weber County. These three projects are developing a path forward. The locals have really taken control and are helping us guide the process in terms of funding and implementation. So in Weber County, connecting from downtown up to Weber State University with bus rapid transit. In South Davis County, our communities of Bountiful, Woods Cross, and North Salt Lake have really rethought how they connect with some of the job centers in Salt Lake County. And then in Murray-Taylorsville, there's been a BRT project that's been in development for a while, which now I think has some additional connectivity to West Valley, and we want to be a helpful partner in that process. And I'll really quickly say, Point of the Mountain Commission, many of you were in that commission meeting this morning. There isn't a week or probably a day that goes by where we don't hear from a startup company, a developer, you name it, a high-tech company who want more transit service. They tell us that their employees fundamentally want to get to the Point of the Mountain area, Lehigh, and Draper and Bluffdale in different ways, and they don't want to have to drive. And so we're working hard to improve the level of service we have today, and then work with the commission in a technical capacity with policymakers to identify new ways to connect through FrontRunner or additional initiatives down at Point of the Mountain. And I'll wrap up here and turn some time over for summation to our chair, but I lastly wanted to point out, so everything that I've talked about, any project or initiative that's new, Jerry talked about our level of service increasing. Jerry also talked about all of our assets in our public transit system, and we have about $8 billion worth of fixed assets in our system. And every dime that goes towards operating the service, maintaining the service, or expanding the service or the projects are contained, in this case, on these two documents that are on the left and the right of the screen. We serve two metropolitan planning organizations. On the left, it's Wasatch Front Regional Council. So everything I just talked about is in the regional transportation plan. And in Utah County, it's the Mountainland Association of Governments. So our plan is really their plan, and then of course all of that rolls up into that statewide unified plan. There are actually four other transit providers in the state of Utah, so all of their transit work along with ours is in that roll-up of the unified plan. So I'll close there and turn it back to our chair, but I just wanted to point out that we have a very bright future in planning.
Thank you, Matt and Jerry. Obviously UTA plays a vital role in the future of the Wasatch Front. No question that transit is a super big issue. It impacts, of course, economic development, it impacts jobs, it impacts education. Almost every aspect of life is touched in some fashion in that endeavor. And so we're mindful of air quality issues. We're mindful of the connectivity of our residents without a vehicle. And we know that our success and the success of transit is built upon the foundation of trust, foundation of service, a foundation of transparency, and obviously built on a foundation of good, strong people. Our motto, as we indicated before, you can depend on UTA. Thank you. We would be interested in responding to questions as time would allow, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we've got a few. Representative Andrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the opportunity to address UTA and the chairman of UTA. And what I'm about to say, I want to do with the greatest amount of respect, because I think the state, in my area in specifics, have to look at multimodal options for long-term growth. I don't think that there's any way that just building roads is going to solve our issue. That being said, and I want to be very delicate, because none of what I'm about to say is a personal attack, but it is the elephant in the room. We were just talking, and I think that you eloquently said that in other areas they've turned to P3, public-private partnerships, to help fund a lot of these things. As I've looked at the unified plan and the funding sources for the unified plan, they're great. Yes, we can champion that plan, but we really only have about 60% currently of revenue sources to fund that plan. So, and I would imagine that UTA's portion within that plan is significantly less. So as we look at these things, and we're looking at other options for funding vehicles, we're looking at P3, we're looking at how do we expand first and last mile with dependable times of arrival and delivery, and how do we do that? And this is where I want to be delicate, is we must cleanse the inner vessel before we look outward. And the perception really is, and maybe you've already righted the ship, I don't know. I was hoping today to hear a little bit more of what changes have happened internally before we start saying, hey, local option, let's increase. Before we start saying, let's expand this to a high level so that you can get more of the funding you need in order for operations and expansion and infrastructure, the trust factor, and I was very pleased to hear you say that the trust is the single biggest factor, how do we develop that trust back with the public? It is delivery times for sure, and the demand is there, but I know, like in Utah County, Prop 1 didn't pass. And the main reason in my mind it didn't pass is because of this mistrust, number one. Number two, I mean, I'm a big fan of bus rapid transit, but in Ormond, Provo, half the buildings in downtown Provo are vacant. The only way the bus rapid transit in Provo made sense is on game day and for the missionaries. Outside of that, it's not going to be a service that is going to, right now, be profitable or anywhere near. And they'll never be profitable. Let's just be clear. They'll never be profitable, but, you know, efficient. So how do you convey to us in any meaningful way that the intervessel is being cleansed such that we can really talk about ramping up funding options? Because right now I think there's a significant reticence to say, let's go ahead and throw hundreds of millions of dollars at this when we're still not sure that the ship is righted. And quite frankly, I'm aware of at least two private bills that are protected, that are looking at possibly restructuring the board of UTA. And looking at ways of cleansing the intervessel, that may be a knee-jerk reaction, but still, I just wanted to hear your input talking about the elephant in the room. How do you build that trust back?
A couple of issues, Representative Andreg. Using your term, the intervessel, let me assure you that the intervessel over the last 18 months has been painfully cleansed, all the way from top to bottom. Has that taken a lot of effort? Has it taken a lot of time? Yes, indeed. We have also, in terms of people, we've done those issues. In terms of policies, we have revamped all of our policies relative to compensation, relative to ethics, all of those things that is hard to convey to the public, but it has been accomplished, and we are continue to be cognizant of those kinds of issues. I'd invite my colleagues to address the issue. It is the heart and soul of what we are about. There is no question that public confidence is challenge number one by a large measure. It's probably challenge number 1, 2, 3 through 10.
And I don't want to be misconstrued. I think that public transit is a portion of the answer. So I'm not suggesting that we just, you know, clean house and then walk away. I'm not suggesting that at all, but if we move towards P3 and we move towards some of these other funding options, we have to have a much higher confidence level.
Well, let me just assure you on the intervessel, in terms of some of the transportation issues, you've talked about the BRT in Orem Provo and others. I'll have Jerry respond to that one. He is working very closely with the stakeholders in Utah County, and can address that.
Thank you. I think where we are with the Provo Orem BRT is very similar to where we were in 1996 with the first tracks line. Those who are around remember it was very controversial. We had a couple talk radio hosts who were making a good living, 4 hours a day, talking about all the reasons why that was a bad idea. We had protesters at the groundbreaking of the first tracks line,
and then they all rode.
So the proof of that pudding was in the eating, and I think we'll see the same thing with the Provo Orem BRT. The market along University is a very rich market of jobs and residences. You have students of UVU who are living close to the BYU campus because they want to be there, that are going to use this line. You have workers at the malls and the offices all along that are going to use this. So I'm confident that we're going to have strong ridership all day long, not just game times on that. I hope I have a chance to be there on opening and shortly thereafter, together with you and other residents of that area and see what it's like. I'm confident it'll have high ridership.
Okay, let's move on because we've got six more lights. Representative King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question. One of the things that I'm a big fan of UTA, and I use its services regularly, and members of my family do too, and we appreciate it. I was very disappointed, however, to see Salt Lake and Utah County reject Proposition 1. That was, I think, devastating. And I have to say, I lay that to some degree at UTA's feet. And there are a lot of folks out there, you know this, there are a lot of folks out there who want to convince others that government generally and UTA specifically can't do the job as well as private entities can do the job in terms of addressing transportation needs. And too often, I think UTA has provided ammunition to those folks. So my question to you, Mr. Burton specifically, is are you committed to doing what's necessary as chairman of the board to improving UTA's performance? I see you recently were unanimously appointed as the chairman of the Board of Trustees for the University of Utah. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But it causes me to wonder, and I want to ask you specifically about your capacity to serve effectively as the chairman of the board in a way that will allow you to address these issues that are compelling and that are significant and that Utahns need to have addressed with full energy and commitment. So I want to ask you specifically about that.
In terms of my commitment, you have my assurance that it is 100%. Let me just tell you that my term as the governor's appointee on the Utah Transit Authority has expired. In just a few minutes, I will be meeting with the governor. And I suspect that some changes may be in order. But I'm not sure what more to say in terms of that situation. But you can rest assured that my colleagues on the board are 100% committed to do what is necessary. You also know that memories are extremely long. And events that took place 5 and 6 years ago are still being conjured up in the press as being current. Let me assure you, they are not. And that there have been and there are dramatic changes that have taken place at UTA that allows that agency to step forward and do what's necessary.
Well, I appreciate that. And I do believe in redemption. And I don't think that UTA was in need of being completely redeemed by any means. There's a tremendous amount of good that you've always done, visionary work that UTA has done for many, many years. I think of John Pingree's work in bringing to pass light rail. I mean, that was something that he fought for valiantly against many, many naysayers. And I don't think there are many people now who look back and think that he was wrong. He was visionary. He was right. And he was not the only one within the organization. So I appreciate all you've done. I do have to tell you this latest brouhaha about transparency and closing the committee meetings was, I think, problematic and was a black eye, and that was relatively recent. Now, you corrected yourself on that, and I appreciate that, but it was still not helpful, I think.
Let me just in a conversation about that. We have transparency issues that revolve around the size of our board. How do you keep transparency within the board itself? And then you have, of course, the transparency with the public and all of the other stakeholders that are a part of that. Our intent for making the changes that we were suggesting was not to exclude the public in any way in the decision-making process of UTA. No decisions are made at the committee level. But there has to be a forum someplace along the line for committee members to have adequate dialogue that is important, as it is with the legislature, with county government, city government, and so on.
It's a challenge. I acknowledge that.
And some of that was
a balancing test.
Was an issue with the media in terms of understanding what was taking place. But you're right. Because of the brouhaha, we just made the statement that everything's open. And we continue to make that statement today that all of the UTA meetings, board, committee, whatever, are open to the public.
And I think that's the position that UTA ought to take, and I appreciate the fact that having initially made, from my perspective, a misstep, that was corrected in relatively short order, so thank you.
Okay, let's go to Senator Harper, who I want to welcome as my new co-chair. It's great to see the Senate being willing to trust such a junior member with this, you know, daunting responsibility of co-chairing this important committee. So, Senator, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for that warm welcome there. One comment. Thank you for listing in your priorities the three other locally led BRT projects. I think those are going to be critical. They're very important to those communities that are looking at them. Second of all, just a quick question. Jerry, when you went through and said how many trips were taken, 43 or 46 million, is that the number of people or is that the number of boardings?
So those are boardings.
Okay, so somebody takes a bus and then goes to track, that's counted.
Right.
That one person is counted twice.
40%, I'm not sure what our current transfer rate is, but some percentage of those are transferring to another trip.
Okay. And then, Mr. Burton, I want to commend you for your tireless efforts to make changes. I know that you've spent a lot of sleepless nights trying to make things better. I don't think that everything's done, but you have made a tremendous effort to change the internal and external operations perception. So I hope that that will continue. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. No good deed goes unpunished, as you know.
Senator Maine.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chair. No snowballs today. Hello, here I am. And I would just like to thank you. I had lots of experience. I sat on the UTA board with Senator Bramble a number of years ago and was honored to help with his skill to help with your retirements and to bring workers so that they made what they should make. And that was years ago, but we're proud of what we did with retirement plan in UTA. And we enjoyed being very much on the UTA board. This year I brought to you, and this is the compliment, I brought to you a resolution that came from Taylorville, West Valley, and Salt Lake County, and my esteemed legislators, mostly up from the west side, and it asked that you, in your new policy changes, what you have is to bring more buses, better bus service to the west side. You know, I've been digging at this for years, and my colleagues also. We have long blocks that we just have a challenge out on the west side, and the growth is exploding. So I appreciate you as you've spoke today about better bus service, making sure that those connections are viable. And I appreciate that when I brought that to you this year, that you responded to it. I went back to the entities that I represent, and they're happy that you are taking advantage and understand the circumstances what we have. You just have to drive down Mount View Corridor and look to the Wasatch Mountains. They're building up those mountains. And so people, you know, transportation is really important to us on the west side. So I just a kudo.
Hello.
Just a kudo to that, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Maine. We appreciate that.
Okay, let's go to Representative Christofferson, and folks, if you could, you know, really move this along. We're running out of time. We got two more things on the agenda. So, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your service, all of you, and those who are here with UTA. Appreciate all you do there and the efforts you have made to improve the service. My interest that I have a question about is the effective and efficient use of tax dollars. Do you have metrics that you use to evaluate the organization similar to, you know, the price per user per trip, things like that you compare and look at the best ways to utilize the operation?
We can get into specifics, Representative Christofferson, but let me tell you, we do have an extensive dashboard that is reviewed on a monthly basis, on an annual basis, that all fold into the goals that the organization has. So the answer to the question is yes. If you want specifics, we'd be delighted to visit with you on those as well.
Great, thank you.
And if I could just add to that, Representative, I invite you to review our comprehensive annual financial report that also gives peer comparisons on issues such as our cost per mile or cost per passenger, so you can see how we stack up to other transit providers.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative D.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have two questions. Let's change direction a little bit. I appreciate where you're going. I think you've done some great things in the last couple of years. The TODs, as long as I've been working a little bit closely with UTA in some of my capacities, I've found that most of the TOD's emphasis was on the tracks and the track system. And a lot of your ridership has to do with not only the new bus rapid transit, but also other large bus routes. And in those neighborhoods where those routes facilitate and actually become the transportation mode, whether it goes to tracks or not, what are we doing? Are we now shifting our emphasis a little bit to those neighborhoods also with TODs? Because I think that would be beneficial to the neighborhoods themselves, rather than not all those people get down to it to a tracks mode.
Jerry, why don't you respond to that from an operational standpoint, please?
Thanks for that question. The short answer is yes. We are in the midst of both resetting our overall TOD approach, which will include looking at core routes in the bus system. But we're also, as part of our launch of our Transit Bill of Rights and Service Standards, we're looking for the opportunity to partner with municipalities to identify a permanent corridor, which by inter-local or by agreement with that municipality, we would agree that that bus route isn't going to deviate from that, and we both would commit, us and the municipality, to making investments in that corridor over time. And as we've met with the developer community, that's the kind of assurance that they've said they need in order for them to start bringing investment into bus corridors.
I think that's a wise move. I think for if you can get all those partners, you can spread that out, you can facilitate more ridership from those people, I think, that need it the most on those. Second question. I'm a little confused. A couple of years ago, we started talking, well, it was, what, 5 or 6 years ago, we built a tracks line to the airport. Great, I've used it. And now we're talking about 5 years after we build one, we're talking about relocating the line completely. Did we know about that relocation 5 years ago when we built that? And if we did, why did we do that?
Let me just respond to that. there was an interlocal agreement at the conclusion of the light rail line to the airport that recognized that at some future time that that line would have to be extended, not relocated necessarily, but extended relatively short distance. After that interlocal agreement, the airport authority, of course, as they have done their planning and so on, decided that, and we agree, that it would be far better for transit customers and for the airport to not only extend it, but to elevate it. And the issue is who pays for that elevation. We agreed at the time of the interlocal agreement, the UTA agreed, that we would bear the cost, understanding that it was going to be a very short extension, probably in the range of $5 million plus or minus. And since then, it's evolved into what it is today.
Well, it seems like the right hand should know what the left hand doing on that, especially when we're working with taxpayers' dollars. So, thank you.
Okay, Representative Moss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you've talked in general about increasing services to the entire county and West Side, but I miss my colleague Janice Fisher, who used to be here and spoke in unfiltered terms, right, about she felt the lack of service to West Valley and Rose Park and areas like that, where you'd move stops that were right by senior centers. Rose Park, I know I remember some of my colleagues talking about residents who couldn't get home from work when they worked at the airport late at night and got off at 2 a.m. Have you addressed some of those specific things?
Great. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Moss. That's a great question. And so the short answer is we're always working to improve our bus service. And even in Salt Lake City, where in Salt Lake County, Proposition 1 didn't pass, we're working very closely with Salt Lake City to improve the service we have today and then look at ways that the city can perhaps even invest more in service to areas like Rose Park and some of the west side of Salt Lake City. So they've taken real ownership in that. Salt Lake City has actually produced their own transit master plan, which has more and additional service to some of those neighborhoods, and we've been a partner with them on that. And so now the challenge is working together to try and realize how we can have more service and more connectivity. But that's always our goal, to improve the system of bus routes that we have today.
Thank you. And just one more thing. I noticed that out of 16 board members or trustee members, you have 3 women. That doesn't match at all the population that rides, uses mass transit. And I think you should have more women on the board.
Representative Moss, we would be delighted to have more representation from the gentler sex. But we have no capacity to influence that. That is the prerogative of local government primarily, with the exception of the 3 appointments that are mandated in the statutes for the Speaker, the President of the Senate, and the Governor.
Well, good. So I think those folks should be looking a little wider.
But the 3 we have are the heart and soul of our organization.
Of course.
They're marvelous.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Barlow.
Mr. Chairman, this was directed towards Jerry. You had that slide that showed an improvement from like 60%. I assume that's on-time services to about 85%. So you've made a huge improvement in that area from what was probably a very unreliable service. If you're almost half the time not, you're there waiting for the service and it's not there, to having the service available. So can you give me an idea, or give us an idea of what going forward, do you have a benchmark that you're looking for? Is it like 95% or better? And what are the factors? Is it just variability and commuter activity? Is it people missing routes? Is it does that make sense on that graph?
Sure. So we do have a long-term goal of 95% on-time reliability for the bus system. We're not quite there. We have achieved it for periods of time in some of our bus business units, but we're not there system-wide, month in, month out. So that's our long-term target. The bus on-term reliability is really a function of several factors. One is the planners. They've got to schedule the time appropriately so that the bus can be on time, and that changes throughout the day, as you can appreciate. So one of the things we've started to do is have variable travel times during the day rather than just a fixed schedule, and that's a little more confusing for customers, but it helps us be on time. Secondly, the vehicles and the rest of the system have to be reliable, and so some of those improvements have come by employee ideas, such as staging technicians in the system to check in with drivers and prevent a breakdown, you know, before a bus has one. The other part of that equation is the driver themselves. And so at the beginning of that chart is when we implemented automated vehicle locating, and also we started a few years after that to give drivers real-time feedback about their on-time performance. So when you're on the bus and you see that mobile data terminal up front, when the lines are green, that means they're on time. If they're yellow, they're more than 5 minutes late. If they're red, they're early. And so if you're on a bus and he pulls over and stops and there's no one to pick up, it's because they're a little bit early. And we found that continuously working on all of those factors, we've been able to nudge that up. You can't account for a foot and a half of snow. You can't account for unexpected construction and a water break. So those things are going to happen, but we think those things should be in the 5% that's left. On the rail line, our long-term goals are in the 98%. And again, we're achieving that on the streetcar. We get close to it on tracks, and our focus this last year has been on Front Runner. And while we've made some improvements there, we still have some work to do on Front Runner. And the challenge with Front Runner is single track. So when you have one train get late, it creates a domino effect and you have a bunch of trains being late. So I think it's something like more than half of our late trains are caused by another train that's been late somewhere up the line.
Okay. All right. That helps us understand that. Thank you. Thank you for your service.
Okay. You. Senator Van Tassel.
Thank you. Appreciate all of your work. One thing in the discussion earlier, there was you made the comment that fuel prices were down and that was helping profitability. I would hope that you're building a rainy day fund and anticipating a rising of those prices because some of us can't live forever like this, and more than likely are going to go up. And so I don't think that's a newfound money that you want to commit other than maybe some rainy day.
Senator Van Tassel, you're right on, and certainly we recognize that, and we cannot afford to place all of those savings in terms of new service. We have to have that rainy day fund to protect ourselves from the upside of costs. So thank you for reminding us of that necessity.
Okay, that's it. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, good to see you. MPOs, let's start making your way up here. Okay, next on the agenda is a long-term planning update from our Metropolitan Planning Organizations.
So I'm sorry that this is...
And